Welcome to the Tortoise Shack Sunday special, guys. It's great to be back. Last week you went without me. I wasn't allowed in. You saw what happened. They all signed in as me and I couldn't get in. So apologies to all the dear listeners who missed me. Thank you to my mom for saying what happened. Why weren't you on it? But outside of that, look, we've a lot to cover this week, so we won't waste much time. I want to just mention very briefly because I'm predominantly a politics-based thing, it's the poll that came out last night. There's a good sticker twist thing here going, Martin. Fine Gael must be itching. You know they've been briefing against the government.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, if you look at the numbers, both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have finished up combined exactly where they ended up at the last election, in and around the 45%. Now, Fine Gael are taking that as a really good sign, but I wouldn't be taking that as a good sign, because the 6 weeks into election, they lost a huge amount of support, a huge amount. So if your starting point is your end point for the next election, doesn't bode too well. But Fianna Fáil, bye-bye.
Yeah, no, Micheál Martin will be possibly the last leader of Fianna Fáil, the way things are going. It's really
or the next
crazy.
Leader of Fianna Gael, or the next leader of Labour, because they're going to have to combine at this stage.
Oh, I don't know. I just think when I looked at the numbers, if I was looking at it, and I, you know, giving Fianna Gael the credit that people have given them for the bounce out of COVID, their numbers, if they do push the button, I think they'd be mad, because they're terrible campaigners, and you know a lot of it will come to the fore when they start the campaign. So yeah, Sinn Féin are sitting back consolidating. The Greens not doing too badly, actually, given considering where everything is. You know,
Start points, end points, Tony. Start
yeah,
points, end points.
But I thought they'd be decimated in this. But look, it doesn't really matter. The one thing I would say is, and it's a shout out to Dublin people. What are you doing? 37%. Are you thinking Fine Gael are doing a good job? We need to sort you out.
Well, luck is down this week, if you don't mind yourselves, I'm telling you.
Linda, have you anything? Did you have a look at that, or is this, or am I just going off bat here?
I haven't actually seen it yet, but I'm very interested to have a look at it afterwards. These polls are always just like, it's so hard to know, and they never ever come out exactly. The smaller parties, maybe. But they never come out exactly where you think the reality is never where they think it's going to be. So, but it'd be interesting to see where a lot of that green, like if they're not that decimated, I think the reality of that's going to be a lot different, and it'd be interesting to see where those votes go. Cause I think people had pegged the Greens as being, progressive kind of left, and they're very much shown that they're definitely not. So I think the Just Transition Greens will be definitely jumping ship. And I think it's down to the other parties to kind of beef up their green policies to try and attract those voters back a little bit. Because there's other parties out there that really do need to focus on that Just Transition a lot more. I think everybody needs to focus on the Just Transition a lot more. So
yeah, I think one point about that, a couple of years ago, Martin, when Sinead Mercy was first in with us, she made the point that she'd be all well and good if every other party stole the Greens' clothes and became green in their own initiative. So that does have to happen anyway, regardless of what direction the Green leadership is going. So we'll just move on very quickly. Conor McGregor was arrested, Linda. Were you surprised?
Yes. Am I surprised? Absolutely not. Because he has gotten away with it before. We know that from the New York Times, so to keep it in very general terms, we know from the New York Times that he has been investigated for crimes here, and we know that the DPP, because of the New York Times, potentially, this is conjecture, I must add that in, the DPP didn't progress with one of the cases here because of that. So he got away with it. And the type of behaviour that we know of seems to be escalating. So it was only a matter of time, I think. If you think you're untouchable, eventually that will bite you on the arse. And I'm hoping that the French in Corsica have enough fortitude. They're waiting for DNA evidence back. Which we know that there was in the Irish case too. So we'll wait and see.
We obviously we talk about this in terms of the Irish terms, but it just shows you how careful on a podcast you have to be about defamation in Ireland. Just shows you how you have to walk around the issues, the stuff that's in the public domain and can be printed in the New York Times, and we have to walk around it. Something has to give here, and you know, it's these defamation laws don't protect you or I. They protect people who have the money to use it as a chilling effect.
I'm currently raising money for victims who are being sued for defamation by their rapists. You know, what these guys don't realize is when you do that. Like, some of these victims don't have any assets, so they're poor marks for defamation cases anyway. All these guys are doing are handing the victims a microphone on their day in court, which is great for us. You know, I'll crowdfund whatever we need to get people whatever justice they need, but we're not seeing enough cases. I mean, you have a case there where there was DNA evidence and there was physical evidence, and the DPP did not bring a prosecution. What is going on in the DPP's office? And I am going to ask this question again and again and again. Why are so few cases getting to court?
I once saw the you know, the way you're not allowed to see the DPP's decision? You know, the way they don't let you to see? I once did on a sexual assault case. And I was gobsmacked, utterly gobsmacked. I thought, how the hell can you get away with saying that? It was ridiculous stuff.
I see them regularly. It's shocking stuff. And it's very traumatizing for the victims.
Martin, if you could stop heavy breathing on your mic, that'd be very helpful. Caroline, I just want to mention, should we all be having big gender reveal parties? Are these the way forward now?
No. Well, unless you have $100,000 to project your baby's genitals onto a building in Dubai, then knock yourself out. No, gender is a nonsense concept for most people in the 21st century, and it's not obviously inclusive of trans people, non-binary people, and all the different formats that we have about gender. And it's also like actually deadly. So, and not in the Irish sense of the word, in the American sense of the word, since gender reveal parties have caused wildfires, not wildflowers, in California. So literally gender is killing us. And that's a metaphor for so much that we have in our society now. So, but you could also see the faces of those people. Like, you can't be disappointed when the worldwide news is in your face with a camera. You can't go, I actually wanted a girl. Like, you can't see, you know, you're just like,
The footballer, Harry Kane, did it where he kicked, did you see it? He took a penalty or whatever it was, and then the balloon burst, and it was the colour, and it was like, you're just going, okay, this has just gone way over nonsense. The top.
And even the person who is credited with inventing these parties has said, actually, I regret this now, and can we all stop it?
But can you imagine at 12 that your child comes down and says, Dad, I'm not sure that I'm happy to be a boy, and you're going, I wasted 95,000 on you.
Yeah, like, no pressure,
this happens. These ones I can get behind. So, you know, you see people having gender reveals for their transgender children.
Yeah, and the only acceptable time.
I love that's a thing, but otherwise, no, thank you.
Just a reminder, there's the audience there. If anybody wants to submit any questions or do just jump into the comments or put your hand up, and feel free to, this is interactive. We will throw mics on anyway shortly. Just want to touch on, Martin, you wanted to touch on the LNG outcome for...
I just wanted to say thank you to FP Logue, thank you to Fred Logue, thank you to Carlin, thank you to all the people who really put years of effort into it. It's a stunning decision that they got. And I think we should just publicly say thank you to them. If I had my way, they'd get freedom of Dublin, but that's just me. I think it was a stunning victory, and well done to all of them.
It's you're just saying this because you hope Mark Ruffalo will slide into your DMs, aren't you?
I'm more interested in talking to Fred Logue, to be completely honest with you. Fred Logue is far more interesting.
It is. It gives hope, especially in the era now where we've seen some environmental protections are just not standing up, and they're not being respected in courts of laws. I know this is really a planning thing, but that's how you use the law. You know, the guys who are smart enough to use the law know how to turn it around like that. And it was terrific to actually do it on that case. It was something that I know Fred put hours and hours and hours and hours and months into, and they're always doing it. I would also say to people who are listening, check out the work the guys do. Go to Right to Know as well, who they all work with. You know, there's this Ken Fox, all of these guys, they're out there trying to do all of that work and expose it, and it's getting harder. It's getting much harder.
Pippa Hackett Bill, let us just mention Pippa Hackett Bill in that. You know, they are making it far more difficult for people.
Just that, just on the fact that you mentioned the bill, I just remind actual listeners that the submission for the sex work thing, Carolyn, it's been extended, has it? Am I right in saying it's been extended?
It's been extended, and then there was a big mess about it. So the survey was extended, and then it was closed, but then they said it was open, but then it was closed. So you have until the, I think it's the 19th, Linda, am I correct? To get your submission in. So there are still people, there's a letter sent in curated by Vicky Conway, 80 academics signed it all across Ireland, which is great. And then people didn't know about it, so she's been contacted since by about 20 people. So there is still time to get your submission in. You can even copy and paste Vicky's letter. It's quite extensive. It's like 4 or 5 pages. You can find it online. And just make sure that you have your say, and the fact that, you know, if you actually listen to sex workers on this and actually advocate for the rights of some of the more vulnerable people in our society, to not put them in jail when they're pregnant.
Just also, Vicky's not here, so just say she's off for the day, enjoying a little bit of a break. But it was just amazing, even the work that she put in on this week's episode of Policed, and the submission link is in the blurb for that. So if you haven't listened, now you have 2 reasons to go back and listen to it. I want to move on to, and I suppose, Linda, I'd really like you to talk about, what did you think when you read the pieces on Speak or Survive?
So you guys have obviously done a bit of a preliminary pod, and we will be doing a little bit more on the Echo Chamber and the Torture Shack to kind of talk about the Speak or Survive series that the Journal and Noteworthy have produced. So I was lucky enough to kind of get a sneak preview during the week. And to say that it really hit me very hard, because there are people whose stories are in there that I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis. There are people I'm doing work with, and I know their stories inside out, back to front. To see it all laid out end to end, to see so many failures of the system, and so many supports that are lacking. And the fact that we do not look at trauma as a holistic thing. We treat individual symptoms of trauma, but we never look at the root causes of the pain. We look at maybe the addiction. We might look at the mental illness or the mental health issues that come from it. The supports are not there. The services are not there. We're relying on underfunded NGOs that have massive waiting lists to try and deal with people, the most painful experiences that people have been through. If you read these articles, pay attention. These are real life people, and their stories are really important. And I have to say, when I finished the second piece, I cried for about half an hour, because it was so tragic. It is so tragic. You know, there are thousands of us, thousands. You just look at the statistics for the Rape Crisis Centre and the amount of people who access their service on a yearly basis. There are thousands of us, and nobody is advocating for us. Nobody is saying we need to fix this. And there's nobody in government. Like, they've recently done the O'Malley report, which was brilliant, you know, and a great step forward for, you know, to make the legal court system much more easy and accessible for victims. That's bullshit if only 4 people in 100 are actually getting to court. I don't care. Get the supports in so that people can come forward, tell their stories, not be worried about defamation, and also make sure that they have the supports there to deal with the fallout and the trauma. Because, like, we're just failing people again and again and again. And it's children. We're failing children. We're setting children up for a lifetime of pain and not helping them.
Just to be cheeky, Peter McGuire, the journalist who has done all this fantastic work, I didn't even tell him, but I've turned his mic on. Peter, do you want to just come in on that for a moment? And first of all, thank you for the work you've done. It's really, really top notch. And I tell everybody, go to Noteworthy, check out the pieces, support the work.
Cheers, Tony, and cheers, Martin. Yeah, good morning. Thanks very much for all your support. And just as Linda's saying there, you know, there's nobody to advocate for victims. I'd have to disagree with that and point directly to Linda herself. A lot of people during the course of my work have mentioned Linda to me, and you know how she's there for them 24/7, and the amount of support she's given, and how she's just so persistent and keeps fighting for victims and for survivors. So I know there's a huge amount of support and gratitude to Linda for everything that she has done and keeps doing. I don't know if I'd be able to keep going at the pace she does myself, so I hope people kind of appreciate the support she gives, and I know they do. Anyway, so sorry, yeah. Just wanted to say thanks. Yeah, the two-part series that we have, the first part was out yesterday, and it's looking at the legal system and how survivors work their way through that system and what the roadblocks and impediments are. The second part, which you'll find on the journal this morning, is it's asking really quite a stark question, which when you boil down to it, are we institutionalizing survivors of sexual crimes? Is it the case that a child who was, you know, sexually abused, or an adult who experiences sexual violence, is ending up in a psychiatric institution? And it's pretty stark that in some cases, yeah, that's what's happening. It's not obviously the case in all cases. I don't think things are as bad as it might have been when the Magdalen Laundries were in Ireland, but there's definitely a pattern of institutionalization there. In the second part, which is on Noteworthy and on the journal today, we spoke to a clinical psychologist who works at the HSE, who really outlines very well exactly what the problems are in the system, and really echoes a lot of what Linda is saying, that it's doesn't take a trauma approach. It looks at, you know, if a person has schizophrenia or they have depression, they treat that, or they might treat addiction, but the services aren't available, particularly in inpatient facilities, for survivors of sexual crimes. And we know from international evidence and some evidence in Ireland as well, that a high proportion of people who experience sexual violence, particularly childhood sexual abuse, will end up with psychological problems if they do not receive adequate support. And we still see in this country that there's a massive waiting list for organizations like CARI, who do phenomenal work in supporting victims of child sexual abuse. There's still a long waiting list for 1 in 4. And we know, yeah, of course, if you experience horrendous trauma as a child, this is a possibility for you. So it's pretty damning, I think, that we're finding people ending up in psychiatric institutions and not getting those supports. And I'll just say maybe one more thing, which is that covering this issue, covering it for a number of years now, probably about 5, 6, maybe 8 years, I'd say at this point, I see so many things in newspapers and on social media of people saying, you know, oh, pedos out, and kill the pedophiles, and you know, rapists are the worst. And when it actually comes down to it, when it actually comes down to the supports that we're willing to give, or the willingness we are to have this conversation. And of course, some people can't have the conversation. I understand that, and I would never insist that anybody does, but there's a lot more people who could be doing a bit more to bring about change, who could be listening. We don't do that. We just scream about, oh, we'll cut their balls off, and then we brush it under the carpet. So that's kind of some of the issues that I've looked at in the two articles today. And yeah, I'll shut up now.
Yeah, I think a side effect of child sexual abuse that we often don't talk about is poverty. And it's such a, like, intrinsic thing. So we're institutionalizing people through, like, you know, psychiatric services as well, but we have to recognize that, you know, if you experience this as a child, it is going to impact your life in so many ways, through trauma and through not being able to be stable enough to, you know, be in healthy relationships, and then you're going to end up in a domestic violence refuge, and then you go, where do you go after that? You go into homeless services. So again, it's like crisis, and when you're in crisis all the time because you have all this unresolved trauma, you know, it's hard to have stable jobs, it's hard to have stable lives and stable incomes and stable accommodation, because it's so insidious, and the adverse childhood experiences, you know, it actually gives you poor physical health as well. So there's people who would score highly on that list and then have issues such as lung issues, which you wouldn't think would be a consequence to childhood sexual abuse, but it is there, and things like poor diet, all those things. So it's not just fixing one thing, it's addressing all those other issues and realizing the scope that this issue has in society, and that it can lead into generational trauma then as well. Because if you don't have the support that's there, if you don't have the money to access services, if you've lived your life in chaos as a natural result of such a horrific traumatic thing, you know, there is risk of carrying that trauma on to the next generation then as well. So it really just needs a massive holistic approach to it that recognizes all the effects of it. And it's not just one easy solution of, you know, oh, we'll treat the addiction, that's fine. You know, there's so many more tendrils to this issue and way more insidious than we think.
There's another point to be made on that, in terms of people who have been traumatized and victimized in this way are more vulnerable, and predators sense that and will then continuously, it's a cycle. So you see people who get who are victimized again and again and again, either through domestic violence or through sexual violence. So, and then you get the weakening of the victim, in terms of they're not allowed to victim blame them. Oh, why do you keep getting yourself into this situation? It's not, because what keeps happening is predators keep preying on them. So it's a cycle, and it's a cycle of oppression. You know, because we're not giving people these supports, we're oppressing victims constantly, and it just leads to, as you say, generational issues. So we're sick with it.
Look, I'll just move us on here a bit. Okay, no, I think we'll break, and we'll ask about what happened at Leinster House. We saw a good friend of the pod, Izzy Kamikaze, on the ground with blood coming out of her head. Caroline, can you give us your opinions on what went on there?
Yeah, well, just judging, I kind of stayed away from a lot of it, but judging on Twitter, it was, long-term activist. Yeah, Izzy's been around since the 80s campaigning. I think she was part of the first Pride Parade in Ireland, like involved.
She was.
So she's hardcore. She has her credentials all set in stone, and then was assaulted by people carrying planks of wood wrapped up in the Irish tricolour outside the Dáil, with the guards watching, standing right next to her, and all caught on camera. I think it was covered in the Journal afterwards, who made the comment that Gardaí had said there had been no record of incidents, which was a technical point when the people in the Journal were defending it and saying it wasn't actually recorded. So obviously it hadn't gotten to paperwork stage. But obviously it doesn't read well if you're not understanding that kind of technical aspect of it. But just horrific violence on the street and in the name of anti-mask demonstrations and COVID denial, which boils my blood personally as a COVID sufferer for 6 months now. And so it's not a hoax. It is real. And I don't have a lot of time for people who deny COVID, and that's my political aspect on that. I'm not going to go on a rant on that. I'll let someone else on that aspect.
Is my mic working? No one can hear.
Sorry, Tony, we're still
can't hear Tony.
Just want to go on and say that these people they don't care about masks. They just follow the heat. They go for whatever issue they can use to drag people into their sick little fantasy world. And they chase the heat. They start with anti-immigration, anti-mask, anti-virus. It's anti the whole way along. Now, look, I'm a great believer in speak your mind, but these people aren't, they're using people. They're chasing the heat. They're looking to bring people in.
Yeah, they're absolutely, what they're doing is they will find an issue that they know that people care about. So obviously corruption is a big thing. And you know, we all care about corruption within the government, and Govgate did not help that. And what happens is they're saying to people, oh, you know what, the government's corrupt, you need to come and join us on this march. So people are toddling along and they're not asking the questions about, well, who are you and what do you represent? You know, and I keep saying to people, by all means, be anti-corruption. That's great. we should all be anti-corruption, but are you actually asking the question of who's organising these marches and how they feel about the gay community or how they feel about immigrants and stuff like that? And ask yourself these really careful questions. And somebody said to me, well, I didn't ask about what the politics were of the water marches. I just went to the water marches and look what we got done there. It's not the same thing. And it's really, this is a recruitment tool, and you need to understand, if you go to these marches, even if you agree with the sentiment of the original thing, then you are agreeing to having somebody's head smashed in for saying that you're not right. And that's what it stands for. So if you're going to stand with them on that, then you have to stand with them and look that woman in the eye with blood running down her face and say, I agree with that. If you don't agree with that, don't go to the marches. Stop it.
Tony, can you
hear me now?
You're still very fuzzy there, Tony, for some reason.
Sorry, guys. Is that any better now?
Fire ahead. Speak ahead,
Tom. Just to be very brief now, okay, our feelings can be very clear on this, but Brian Wall, Brian, if you're there, you do a lot of stuff through the Beacon. You've got a lot of experience. I don't know if you want to have a word on this, but I just I'm conscious that I've put your mic on if you want to come in. If not, don't worry. I understand that other people can feel a bit intimidated in this situation of what's actually being carried on. I will say for Izzy Kamikaze, is a friend of the pod, a long time friend of ours, and I think she was our fifth episode, Martin. She was our second guest, so it's a long standing thing with her. Martin has texted me saying my sound is off, guys, so you just play on. I'm gonna try and get this fixed. You need to, Oisin Murphy Lawless has his hand up, Martin, so you need to actually start doing it.
Okay, Oisin, do you want to come in there, buddy?
Nice one there, Martin. Yeah, no, I was just wondering, I don't know whether you saw during this week, the American writer and activist Cory Doctorow, he posted up a piece there by some guy who works as president. He's an academic and works on anti-genocide issues. And, you know, we started to see the QAnon heads drop up at these anti-mask demonstrations and stuff. And he was sitting there saying, look, we need to stop calling QAnon some kind of like mad kind of like conspiracy and call it for what it is. It's the second coming of Nazism. You know, he said he mapped the tropes back to the nonsense that was written back in the day about the protocols of Elder Zion and all that. And he's going, you can see like direct one-to-one correlation in terms of what they're doing. I was just wondering, had anybody else seen that? And also I think BuzzFeed this week, you know, they came up and they said, look, we're not calling this a conspiracy anymore. It's something more. It's like some mad mass delusion. And it's extremely problematic because it's just, they're using it now to get in everywhere. And that sort of like, that aspect of fundamental skepticism, it doesn't make a difference. And Ireland is like prime territory for that with our political corruption. Like,
I think Ireland being centre-right and never having a left government makes us more susceptible to right-wing ideology. I think as a nation, we're more susceptible to it. It's never hugely far from the major political parties. I mean, we have seen that with their own members that they've had to suspend or take the whip away from. And we also have people within the Dáil who quite openly anti-Islamic, anti-mask, and think this is a conspiracy. The whole COVID thing is a conspiracy. So how do you get past that delusion?
Well, and also anti-traveller as well, Martin. We had the rise of Peter Casey, and when he came, he was doing, what was he on, a couple of percent in the presidential election, and then when he came out and made his racist comments against travellers, he absolutely shut up and then came second. So, and you know, we've had several TDs that will, like Justine Madigan, and you know, we had Anne-Marie last week on the podcast making some excellent points about this, but it seems like that institutional racism is now affecting so many more different areas as well.
Brian, did you want to come in? Brian Wall, did you want to come in there?
No, just like everybody who saw the footage from yesterday, I mean, it's fairly, you know, it's shocking. It really is. Not surprising as such, because, you know, we've been kind of seeing the the tension grow and the kind of viciousness grow slowly over the last, say, busy year and a half. And we've seen a couple of assaults, especially in the last few months. And, you know, there was a serious assault about 2 weeks ago at the Custom House. And then to see Izzy yesterday, then, you know, it's never pleasant to see that. And I think we're in a very, turning point at the moment in terms of how things are going to develop in terms of the far right here, because they're very emboldened at the moment. They think they're untouchable, and it seems like they are almost. And you know, that needs to be a proper discussion amongst everybody on the left, from the centre over. Like, how are we going to approach this? How are we going to tackle it? And ensuring that we tackle it in the best possible way, and make sure nobody is left behind. Because, you know, the slightest gap, you know, the far right will get in there, and, you know, they'll use a wedge tactic to kind of open up the gap so they can take advantage of the situation. And like you were saying, you know, that's what they're doing at the moment. You know, they're focusing on, you know, COVID and anger at the government. You know, it's a wedge tactic to, you know, they have some of them, like I said, I've said before, like some of the main players have a large audience, but that doesn't necessarily translate to feet on the ground. So what they've done now is they've, you know, this cynical kind of strategic move, you know, oh, we're concerned about children, we're concerned about, you know, government overreach, we're concerned about the virus, and all of a sudden they're getting, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 people outside the Custom House, they're getting, you know, a couple of hundred people outside the Dáil, and mixed in with that group are, you know, normal people who are, you know, genuinely concerned about the government and, you know, state of our society, alongside guys that we know for a fact are members of Generation Identity. They're members of the National Party. There are guys there who have been regularly harassing activists, especially women and migrants, online via multiple, countless Twitter accounts for the last few years. Like, we know all these guys. We know they're there. And that's, you know, that's the current situation we're in. And it's really deeply, deeply unpleasant to see it kind of...
Gabriel, you know, Colleran. Can I ask Gabriel Colleran to come in there? Is that okay?
This is where we leave you for today. We have the full version, including the Q&A with the listeners and supporters, available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We have a few, you know, we get into it. Let's just say it gets a little bit heavier. And we just want to thank the people for coming along, joining us, helping us keep this show on the road. If you want to come along to these events, you just have to head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Sign up. It's really good value as far as I'm concerned. We put a lot of work into it, a lot of podcasts out there, but there's a lot of exclusive content that is up there, because that's what pays for this. We have no ads, no sponsors. We need support. Without that, it all goes away. Thank you for listening. Talk to y'all soon. Bye-bye.